Well, hey, Paseo, glad to be back with you. Get to hang out with Carlo today as we walk through our text today. And just want to say a big greetings to everybody who gets to tune in. We're going to walk through Psalm 63 today, an awesome psalm. Carlo's in a with a couple of other guys, Jomel, Will, some other, you're in a preaching class group. We're walking through the Pathways stuff. And you're preaching on Psalm 63 in a couple days.
Yeah.
So you get like a head start on this, and which is cool. Wonderful psalm. But we always like to start as we get going with some reading tips as our folks are reading through Scripture. And so why don't you walk us through the reading tip for this first one?
Yeah. I think in particular in the Psalms, right, there's a lot of kind of this imagery. There's a lot of this. He's using these kind of physical realities to help us understand what spiritual realities are, right? And so in Psalm 63, he'll talk about thirsting, right, mm-hmm. for the Lord, right, to help us understand what that physically looks like too. Mm-hmm. And so, like, we need to be on the lookout for that, right? Because mm-hmm. It helps us to relate kind of at almost at a heart level and at a physical level to understand what we spiritually would need.
And you're exactly right. So the tip is to look for imagery, particularly mm-hmm. here in the Psalms, because Psalms are Hebrew poetry, mm-hmm. and they don't use rhyme and meter like our poetry does, but they do use word imagery quite a bit to explain some spiritual realities. And sometimes I don't think we treat the authors of the Bible like the artist that they are.
Yeah.
Like these are poets that are sitting down and they're looking for poetic ways mm-hmm. to express deep truths. And just like you can read a poem or hear a song that's well written, that stirs you with the way that they describe things, that's the spiritual gift of these poets mm-hmm. that are in the Psalms that they weave together. So we'll read this here in a bit of David's psalm here in 63. And he has a gift for this and he uses a word imagery that we can all see right away. So as you're reading the Psalms, yeah, look for imagery, look for metaphor, what they're saying, and then ask, what is the emotional or mm-hmm. spiritual reality that they're expressing through that imagery, through what he's saying there.
And I think that's super important for us, particularly here in the West, where we really engage intellectually, right? It's almost this shift that has to happen in us where we're looking for it, not just to go, hey, what does it say? What does it mean?
Yeah.
But like, what is the feeling that it's trying to invoke in us? So.
Absolutely. And Jesus did this all the time, by the way. He loved to use metaphor and imagery, you know, and talking about the birds of the air and the lilies of the valley.
Yeah.
You know, he has a way of using physical imagery there to express spiritual reality. So today we're going to walk through Psalm 63, which is a beautiful psalm. And I have this... anytime I read this psalm, I'm taken back to being a child in my church and hearing my mom sing the song that's been, you know, as a deer pants before the water, so my soul longeth after you. Man, I can hear my mom's voice just singing that. It was one of her favorite things. So when I read this, man, I'm immediately like...
taken back.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I just, it's sweet memories of that. But... so this is a psalm of David. And so if you're reading the Psalms, we were just looking at this a couple days ago. A good portion of the Psalms are attributed to David.
To David, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, to King David. There's many of them that are also attributed to Asaph or to Korah. Mm-hmm. And then you have a good portion of them that have no author whatsoever. So under Psalm 63, it gives us a little subtitle that gives us some
insight,
context.
Yeah.
So walk us through the context of Psalm 63, maybe what we think is probably going on while he's writing this.
Yeah, for sure. So a Psalm of David, when he was in the wilderness of Judah, it says, and so there's there's kind of these two periods, right? He's running away from Saul, right? Mm-hmm. He's in the wilderness. He's being chased after another when he's run from his son. Right, mm-hmm. Absalom. And so, mm-hmm. You know, either of those places, both he's got people who are legitimately coming after him, mm-hmm. wanting him dead. Mm-hmm. Right. And so then we get this, we kind of get this psalm and some insight into what he's thinking through as he's navigating these very present realities of being chased after by his enemies.
Yeah, which was so he's probably sleeping in caves.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which makes this when he's talking about thinking about God in his bed, like he's probably sleeping on some rocks. Uh-huh. He can't sleep at night and God is on his mind. But yeah, so he's in this like fearful place. He doesn't know how everything's gonna work out. And you were talking about this earlier, the importance of really letting your heart resonate with the emotion mm-hmm. that he's feeling. So if that immediate context helps us know, all right, here's a brother who is scared. Mm-hmm. He's being chased. In both cases, whether it's Saul or it's Absalom, he didn't do anything wrong to deserve that.
No.
So he has, and let's just go with it's Saul. He's been nothing but good to Saul.
Yeah.
And Jonathan, Saul's son, is his best friend. He has played the harp for Saul so Saul mm-hmm. could go to sleep. I mean, he has long history with Saul, and now Saul wants him dead.
Yeah.
And he's done nothing to deserve that. So you got to think all those feelings of injustice, mm-hmm. of fear, of questioning what's going on. And I doubt you and I will ever be running from enemies, sleeping in caves, scared they're going to kill us. But those are emotions we could relate to.
For sure.
Right?
Like for sure.
Questioning, why is this happening?
Yeah.
Where's God in all this? And from the opening, we can tell he's exhausted.
Yeah.
Like, he's going, the desert is not just physically where he is, it's spiritually mm-hmm. where he is as well.
Right? And then where does he go in his mind and his thinking as he writes and as he processes and as he thinks?
Yeah. Yeah. Just sets this up beautifully. Why don't you read it for us? You want to read it's a short psalm. We've got 11 verses here, so why don't you read Psalm 63.
Psalm 63. Oh God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you, as in a dry and weary land where there is no water. So I have looked upon you in the sanctuary, beholding your power and glory. Because your steadfast love is better than life, my lips will praise you. So I will bless you as long as I live. In your name I will lift up my hands. My soul will be satisfied as with fat and rich food, and my mouth will praise you with joyful lips. When I remember you upon my bed and meditate on you in the watches of the night, for you've been my help, and in the shadow of your wings I will sing for joy. My soul clings to you, your right hand upholds me. But those who seek to destroy my life shall go down into the depths of the earth. They shall be given over to the power of the sword. They shall be a portion for jackals. But the king shall rejoice in God. All who swear by him shall exult, for the mouths of liars will be stopped.
I like this. I like this a lot. Well, okay, so we immediately get into, and we can see some of the imagery right away, you know, as he's in a dry and parched land where there is no water. He says, my soul is thirsting for you. And like, he probably is physically thirsty. Like mm-hmm. He's relating, he's realizing it's not just my body that's thirsty, it's my soul that's thirsty as well. I misquoted a while ago and was thinking of the other psalm where, as a deer pants for water, so my soul thirsts for you. And you know what's interesting is I was having a thought during prayer retreat. These psalms came to my mind. And the thought that I was having is I've always attributed to David as, man, look how godly David is. He's thirsting for God.
Yeah.
Like this dude is, he's like hungering for God. The revelation I had though is, why am I attributing this to David as being like a morally good, mm-hmm. like, look, he's spiritually awesome. Look what he, cause like, for instance, we don't look at somebody who's thirsting like naturally for water and go, man, he's awesome. Look at him. He's thirsty.
Yeah, yeah.
You go, no, of course he's thirsty.
Yeah.
His body's made to do that. And I think he's just making an observation of just like my body can't go without water. God, my soul cannot go without you. And, and I am thirsting for you. And he gives in verse 3 the reason why. Because your love is better than life. You know, what's one of the things that's interesting in here is he doesn't say, I'm thirsting for you to put an end to all of this.
For sure. It's for him.
Yeah.
And there's a this verse too. So I've looked upon you in the sanctuary, right? He's back out. He's in the wilderness. He's on the run. He's away from home. He's away from, right? And it's this. It's almost this like, hey, I remember those times when I was sitting there, you know, with you, you know, when I was in the sanctuary, and this is what I'm remembering. This is what I'm trying to. This is what I'm trying to recall as I'm literally in the middle of this. This wilderness.
It's so good. So you got to think like Old Testament, the temple hasn't been built yet because David's son Solomon's going to build that. So he's talking about the tabernacle.
Yeah.
Right. And where they're worshiping the Lord. And then there near the Ark of the Covenant, you know, which David gets to be a part of bringing back in. That might be later on in his ministry. We don't know. But their understanding, you know, is that God's presence is in that worship place.
Yeah.
Whereas we have a little bit different understanding of that, we get the presence of God with us wherever we are. We would think and say, I know you're right here in the cave.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like we can relate to this of going, there are times when I have felt the nearness of the Lord.
Yeah.
And it is rich. And then there are other times where I'm like, where are you?
I was wrestling with that last night as I was reading through this.
Yeah.
You know, I was sitting there going, man, I close my eyes and I pray. But then I talk to God as if he's out there. Like I'm picking up the phone line and I'm trying to call him.
Yeah.
Rather than remembering for us, right, on this side of the cross, on this side of Christ, like, hey, that he's actually near.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a promise that we get that David doesn't have.
He doesn't, no.
And that's always good when you're reading the Psalms. This is one of the things we're working at in Pathways is how does Jesus change the reality that we experience versus what he experienced, because that's pre-Jesus.
Yeah.
It's pre the Holy Spirit residing in the life of the believer. And so we might process this differently, but the truth of, hey, our souls were made to thirst for God.
Yeah.
For his love.
Mm-hmm.
That's a truth that is for everyone. And I love him just wrestling with that of man, I just want your presence. And I think so often, man, when I'm like, if I were sleeping in a cave running from evil, like I think I would be like, God, I am thirsty for you to fix this.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of how we pray as believers is kind of those circumstances. But for him, he gets to this place of like, hey, when I remember you, when I meditate on you, right? He's reminding himself of what is true about who God is, right? And it's not just the, just switch this up.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, do something for me, God.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's this meditation on him. It's this meditation on him.
I like how he involves his body in this as well. So he kind of shows us, like he's saying, man, my lips will glorify you. I'm going to lift my hands and worship. We do that a lot at Paseo. Mm-hmm. And hey, lift your hands here. And there's things like this are why? Because we're not... we're a whole person, and so engaging our physical bodies in our worship and saying it out loud. You know, I don't know how often you pray out loud, but it feels different.
Oh yeah,
than when you're just praying silently in your
Head. Last night I was sitting through that where I was wrestling again with this like, man, why do I pray as if God is far? And so last night as I was prepping and reading Psalm 63, it was just like, let me just speak this out loud.
Out right here?
Yeah, because I know he's here.
And it just changes things, right? Uh-huh. And so he's like, so you can just picture him in this cave, hands lifted, my lips are praising you, I'm longing for you. And I like this, that on my bed, I remember you, and I think of you throughout the watches of the night. His mind is dwelling on God.
Yeah.
Dwelling on God. Man, so often when we go through like hard times, anxiety overwhelms us when we dwell on the problem.
Yeah.
Right. And I think David's teaching us just a beautiful way out of anxiety is, hey, dwell on God.
Yeah.
I think about him, his bigness.
Yeah. I've been using this example in student ministry lately where, I was telling students, we probably spend more time reminding ourselves of our anxiousness than we do running to the gospel, than we do running to the truths about who God is, right? So, I mean, you can imagine, like when you're sitting in your anxiety, you just replay the stories in your head. You're telling yourself stories of how this could come out, And I think there really needs to be this shift in us, just like we're seeing here from David, where, okay, I'm not gonna allow those things to run rampant in my mind. I'm gonna shift my head.
Yeah, absolutely. And he tells you why. Verse 7, because you are my help. Like, he's not questioning, God, are you going to help? Mm-hmm. He knows, like, you love me. You are for me. You are here. You are going to help. And I will sing in the shadow of your wings. So this other imagery of, like, this mom bird covering up her chicks, you know, underneath her wing. What an awesome imagery there. Or maybe like an eagle. Maybe he's watching. Maybe he's in a cave and he's watching like a nest of birds. And he's like, that's how I feel right now, Lord. Like, I know you're going to take care of me. But that's why we focus on the Lord. Mm-hmm. And we just turn our attentions to, hey, you've got me.
Yeah.
You've got me. And I just need to be there for a while and to think about that. Well, as we walk through this, you can see all kinds of parallels to our life and what this feels like. But it feels like, we were talking about this before we started.
What do we do at the end?
Yeah, it's like this beautiful, sweet psalm. And then he's like, and kill all my enemies.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's always been one of those, the harder parts for me, right? As my soul thirsts for you, hey, okay, I can remember those moments of man, like, I don't know what's going on in my life, God, I need you, you know, like, help me remember you're good. And then I always get to the end of these psalms where there's this shift of, yeah, like, and the rest of them can.
Yes.
what do we do with that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I love how human that is. Mm-hmm. So we were just praising him of, he's not saying, fix all my problems.
Yeah.
But he's kind of saying,
fix
all my problems. Like, but he's saying, you are going to. Like, I'm going to cling to you. I cling to you, verse 8. Your right hand upholds me. You got me. And those who want to kill me will be destroyed. And so what's he doing there? Well, and we really wrestle with this because there are these psalms that are called imprecatory psalms where, like, the psalmist speaks very openly about wanting to kill his enemies.
Yeah.
Like, I hate my enemies, destroy them. And they get very graphic and harsh. Because it's a psalmist expressing his real thoughts. And I think, first of all, that's something that we would do well to learn, is that God says, you will seek me and find me when you seek me with your whole heart.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's good.
Bring that honesty.
Yeah.
God's not going to go, I can't believe you said that.
Like, yeah.
I'm out.
Like, yeah, forget that. No, absolutely.
He meets us there. So that's like, be angry. Now, if you're wrong, he's going to correct you, but at least... Mm-hmm. Tell him how you feel, right? Mm-hmm. And so here he's wanting. So when you read these psalms and they're super harsh toward their enemies, it stands out to us because we have the teachings of Christ that teach us to love our enemies.
Turn the other cheek and all. I mean, I just think about the sermon that you wrote some weeks ago about, hey, you know, treat them like the outsider. How does Jesus treat them like the outsider? He dines with them, right? The tax collectors.
And he cares for them.
Yeah, and he cares for them.
Jesus even goes on to say, like, love your enemies so that you'll show yourself to be children of God, of your Father in heaven.
Yeah.
Like, this is the singular characteristic. So what do we do with this? Well, let's back up just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because if this is Saul, then we know who his enemy is, who he's referring to here. Mm-hmm. And if you know the story of David and Saul, it's awesome. Saul is trying to kill David. David finds out where Saul's sleeping.
Yeah.
Right? And where Saul's using the restroom.
Relieving himself, yep.
Yeah. And he hides in the cave and he cuts off a piece of Saul's robe. Like, he has a chance to take vengeance on Saul, and yet he doesn't.
Yeah.
He turns the other cheek. He literally does what Christ, and he actually blesses, and he tells his soldiers, like, he keeps his men from going to kill Saul. He's like, no, we're going to bless our enemies, and it humbles Saul like crazy.
Yeah.
And so there's a little bit here of what he's saying is he's trusting justice to the Lord.
Yeah.
He's saying, I'm going to cling to you. I'm not going to cling to having to make all these things right and fighting for myself and going after my, I'm not clinging to my need to be right. I'm clinging mm-hmm. to you mm-hmm. and I'm leaving room for you. It reminds me of a passage in Romans chapter 12, starting in verse 19, Paul talking to the church. So this is on this side of the cross. This is in a section where he starts out talking about how love must be sincere. Verse 9, hate what is evil, mm-hmm. cling to what is good.
Yeah.
That's literally what we just read that David is saying. But how does that play out for the believer? Well, verse 19 or verse 17, do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. And if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. So here's our calling. Like, you don't repay evil for evil. So which is, David doesn't do that. He doesn't go out and attack Saul. He trusts it. And here's where it gets interesting. Verse 19, do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, it is mine to avenge. I will repay, says the Lord, on the enemy. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. Mm-hmm. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. And he goes on to say, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Yeah. And so what do we do with these passages like this where he's speaking about enemies? Well, I think as a New Testament, we need to think very clearly of there will be people that position themselves as our enemies. Mm-hmm. Enemies to the gospel, mm-hmm. enemies to you at work. But we have very clear
directives
yeah. of how to operate it. And so what happens if they do things that are unjust towards you?
You love them.
Do not repay evil with evil. Mm-hmm. But does God not care about justice?
No. I mean, yes, he does. Yes, he does.
So you're trusting him. You're yeah. like, all right, that God, you will take care of this in the end. Mm-hmm. And you will do that. He will either take care of it. This is just an interesting thought. He will either take care of it by them becoming believers and mm-hmm. repenting, and the same way that you and I are justified.
Yeah, by the Lord. Yeah.
By Christ's perfection. Because, yeah. man, God cares so much about justice, he sent Jesus to die. And if he didn't, we would be messed up.
Yeah.
We were enemies, right? And so he's either going to take care of it, or we're trusting, hey, in the end, God is the judge over all, and everyone's going to stand to account. So you leave room for the Lord. Man, an interesting psalm. As we walk through it all, a real psalm, something that we can relate to. As we finish up this section of it, is there something in this psalm that jumps out to you that you want to highlight?
Yeah. In verse 5, he says, my soul will be satisfied. Mm. And then he gives us like as fat, rich food. He says, when I remember you and meditate on you, for you have been my help. And so there's almost a sense of like, I got to be able to look back at what God has done. Mm. So that way I can look forward knowing and trusting that he's coming through. Mm. He's been faithful through and through. Mm. What makes me think that this is going to be different? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that reflecting back, remembering what Christ has done, remembering mm. what God has done, and allowing that, right, to go, over my present circumstances, I know that this to be true about God. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
And I love that word satisfied. It reminds me of John Piper's line of God is most glorified in us when we're most satisfied in him. Such a beautiful line. And I think it's part of the calling of the believer to seek your satisfaction in the Lord on a daily basis, like on a regular day. Let my soul be satisfied as with the riches of food, like feast on the goodness of God.
Yeah. That would be an interesting, even just this week, as, hey, when you're thirsty and you get drink and you are satisfied that, you know, or when you're hungry and you eat and you're satisfied that you would take that moment to that satisfaction. Remember, like, hey, my true satisfaction is in the Lord.
Yeah. But even as you're saying, like I know what it feels like to be hungry. Mm-hmm. I know what it feels like to be thirsty. And I know what to do when I feel those things. Like when I'm sitting up in my office. And I've skipped lunch, and I'm like, I will go get a burrito.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I know what the feeling is. But I think what he's teaching us is we also need to recognize, what does it feel like when your soul's thirsty?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Like when you haven't been going to the Lord, what does that feel like? See the symptoms of that and then know what to do in that. Like, I got to run to the Lord. I got to raise my hands. I need to praise the Lord. I need to remember his goodness towards me and let my soul be satisfied. I need to drink deep in the goodness of God. Yeah, good stuff. That's a great takeaway. I like that, satisfied. I will stick with that, man. Well, awesome to walk through that. Psalms are beautiful. They really help us connect to the emotions of following the Lord, of really get down in them. So I like those a lot. It's been fun to go through those. We did get a question in this week, to shift gears totally here.
Yeah.
All right. So we had somebody write in, and they had a question about a story in 1 Samuel where Saul gets in trouble, King Saul gets in trouble because he's about to go to war. And before he goes to war, he wants to offer a sacrifice to the Lord, make an offering to the Lord. Samuel's not there to do it. He's waiting on Samuel. Samuel takes longer than he said he would to get there.
Well, longer than maybe Saul wanted. When
Saul wanted, yeah.
Because shortly after he begins the process of sacrifice,
Samuel shows up. Yeah. And so then Saul goes ahead and makes the offering himself. Mm-hmm. And then Samuel shows up, and it's because of that, Samuel's response is, God is going to take the kingdom away from you. And this is the first time we see mention David. He's already appointed someone to come after you who's a man after his own heart, because you're clearly not after his own heart.
Yeah.
Because you're... And this is why it doesn't seem like that big of an offense. Like, he's trying to honor Yahweh. So why did God get so mad at the king for honoring Yahweh? And so the question that came in is, why was Samuel allowed to offer sacrifices to God, but Saul was not? And this person wants to know, neither of them was a priest or described from the tribe of Levi. So why was Saul condemned for offering sacrifices, but Samuel was not? So we have a correction on that. You want to step into the correction on that?
No, you tell us why, Shelton. No, no, hey, just a real quick thing, because a lot of times we can sit here and kind of go back and forth, and it can just feel like we're just this wealth of knowledge.
Oh,
and,
yeah, we get this memorized.
Yeah, we've got this memorized. but in reality, a lot of it is because the questions have come in, and but we can go and put...
We research it.
We can go do the research, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think one of the things in the that we were looking at was neither of them for the tribe of Levi, but 1 Chronicles 6 actually shows that Samuel is from the tribe of Levi. So if that's, you know, kind of the crux of the question, is that they're not from the line of Levi, like Samuel is. But more than that, right, he's also prophet. They're kind of in this in-between. They're moving towards monarchy, right?
Yeah,
And God has commissioned him for these things.
This is what he does. So he is a Levite, so he is like physically allowed to give offerings. And so that's a correction on that. Now, it's kind of confusing because 1 Samuel calls him an Ephraimite, right? So 1 Chronicles 6 calls him a Levite. So what's the deal? Well, we know he comes from the tribe of Levi. We know a clan of the Levites were given land in Ephraim, right? And so he is a Levite from living in Ephraim, right? And so I joked a while ago, that's like saying you're Californian, but you're also Filipino, right? And so you live here, but your line comes from another. And so that's, he's a Levite, but he's living in Ephraim, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why it there's a bit of confusion there. So Samuel has the right. But I think the bigger issue of the story is why is it so bad that Saul does make that? Why do you think God responds so harshly to that?
Yeah, you can begin to see, and I'll just read just this little bit here, right? So Samuel shows up, right? Literally minutes after he's done the sacrifice, and I think we really hear it in his response to Samuel. Saul goes to Samuel, and almost he's like defending why he did what he did.
Yeah.
Right, and he says, Samuel said, "What have you done?" And Saul said, "When I saw that the people were scattering from me, that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines had mustered at Michmash. I said, now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal. I have not sought the favor of the Lord. So I forced myself and offered the burnt offering." Mm-hmm. So he has a sense where, again, like the circumstances that are around him, again, real circumstances, like fearful, like literally people are going into hiding. They're afraid, they're scattering. And he's waiting. He's trying to wait. You know, he's trying to wait. Where's Samuel? And at some point, the circumstances just overwhelm him, and he's got to make a move. He's got to do something here. Mm-hmm. And yet, it's not what Samuel had told him to do.
And nor is it what he's allowed to do. Mm-hmm. And I think the bigger lesson there is, hey, we don't get to follow God the way we mm-hmm. want to follow mm-hmm. God, but the way that he has laid out for us.
Yeah.
Because by definition, that means we've stopped following
God. We're doing it our own way.
Right. And so you think about how that plays out in the church and the world today. Mm-hmm. Of you don't get to follow Jesus the way that you think right. And you don't get to say, hey, Jesus values all these things because you value him. You have to actually look at what Jesus values. Mm-hmm. What does he mm-hmm. say? Who's following whom here? Mm-hmm. Right? And so Saul, and this becomes a character flaw for Saul, mm-hmm. he's a very scared of what people think about him.
Yes.
And he's more worried about that than he is about what the Lord thinks about him.
Yeah.
And that ultimately gets him. And I can relate to that. Mm-hmm. You can relate to that. I think we all can. There are times when I have to choose, and we all do, obeying and following Christ, even when I know that's going to be hard. It's going to, people might scatter away from me. People may not like that. Mm-hmm. It's going to make, or in this case, waiting on God.
Yeah.
Which is really, really hard. Choosing patience mm-hmm. when I just want to go fix the problem myself and try to go.
Oh, that's a big one for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So just resting in the Lord. So ultimately God's response there is, and you see the difference in the, like we just read the Psalm of David, mm-hmm. where he's saying, I'm not going to take it into my own hands.
Yeah.
I'm going to cling to the Lord. I'm going to trust the Lord. And so that's a man after God's heart.
Yeah.
Whereas Saul is, I'm going to take it into my own hands. I'm going to cling to my own plan. I'm not clinging to God. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to get the blessings of God by doing it my way.
Yeah.
Right? It's such a dichotomy and difference between those.
I mean, even that, like, I'm trying to get the blessings of God.
Yeah.
Like I'm trying to incite the Lord to bless me by doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is why he was making the offering, mm-hmm. not to worship Yahweh, mm-mm. because he wanted the blessing of Yahweh before he went into battle.
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm going to get my blessing. And we hear that within Christianity today. Well, hey, these are awesome questions. I love getting to wrestle with all of these. Thanks for coming and hanging out today.
Yeah.
The time is coming. And not far away, where I won't be here for like 7 weeks. You're going to have to fill in a lot.
Yep.
I like it, man. Wonderful job. Thank you. Appreciate you. Hey, Paseo, thanks for following along. Hopefully, you gained some insight into Psalm 63. I know I did as we studied this. We're praying for you. I'll see you here next week, and thank you for coming along. See ya.